on the, I guess, the other side of the spectrum is just it's internalized in terms of like what's wrong with me, why aren't people accepting of me? Am I good enough? And those types of things. And like all that resonates with me. And so it's really easy to validate because I've walked in those spaces.
So, welcome to another virtual episode of the Pillow Fort Sessions podcast. I am Nicole Fortune here in the Pillow Fort, virtually joined by Erica Thomas. Hello, who is kind of pseudo in the Pillow Fort. And we are going to be talking about a topic that is close to my heart and psyche. As a woman of color, and that is mental health and racial identity. And so I think this is going to be a good one. So thank you for doing this.
Yeah, absolutely. No problem at all. I'm so glad you have this platform and are creating the space to just provide a space for conversation and additional discussion on so many valuable topics, particularly around mental health and race, and just how we navigate all of that, particularly as a person of color. So thank you for having me, and I'm really excited to kind of dive into the topic today.
Thank you. So my first question, of course, is, why did you decide to become a therapist as opposed to an astronaut? I'm wearing a NASA shirt, so that was my first thought today.
That's a great spectrum of like therapist, astronaut.
Right.
Great question. It's relatively loaded, so I'll give you the condensed version of it.
Sure.
Like so many people, I grew up in, in a family where there were some themes of addiction and mental health issues, just a lot of interpersonal conflict that I kind of just witnessed and experienced and happened around me. I recognized as a young person that I was not unique in that experience, and many other people were having similar experiences. So I always had this interest in just like human behavior and what kind of happens to get a person to a point where, perhaps they're dealing with suicidality or addiction, trauma, all those types of things. So I always had a curiosity and just around that. And so fast forward to finishing my undergraduate degree, I actually enlisted in the United States Army Reserves and ended up serving for a total of 6 years reserve and active duty. And during that time, I met a great deal of people and really discovered that, one, people like to tell me a lot of really personal things. Like just with so much ease. It's like kind of like, good morning, like, oh, I'm getting a divorce today.
Like, you just got one of those faces.
Yeah. So it's like a running joke. Like I try anytime I'm out to just be very quick and concise, because if I'm in a store for too long, I just end up making friends and having really long conversations with people. So I kind of quickly learned that I was good at talking to people, good at listening to people and really empathizing and understanding where they were coming from. And so during that time while I was in the military, because I was afforded the opportunity to continue my education, I decided to pursue psychology and eventually professional counseling, and went through all the coursework, training, internships, practicums, all that fun stuff to finally become licensed as a licensed clinical mental health counselor associate. We just recently had a licensure name change. We were licensed professional counselors. Now we are licensed clinical mental health counselors. And it's a mouthful.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a lot of space too on your door.
Yes.
I know some people are having issues with fitting that on their business cards. Not sure why that changed, but who knows? So yeah, we've heard a lot of people say almost on every episode that this is just kind of a natural thing for them. So it sounds like that was the same thing for you. You just got one of those personalities where people feel like they can trust you and tell you everything. But what is so shocking to me is that not only do you have the same name as my mom, but my mom was also in the army. So that's so cool.
We're like twins or
You're
something.
like twins. And yeah, while she did not go into the mental health field, for people who have listened to the episode with her and I, you can see that she's definitely making use of it. So she might not be a practitioner, but she's definitely a practicee, I guess you could say. And so you are have your private practice now, and you do a lot of things, but you primarily focus on stuff about race. So out of all the types of therapy you could have picked, why did you decide to focus on that?
Well, I feel like it kind of picked me. Initially, I went into wanting to focus on trauma, and there's just a huge overlap with trauma and race-related stress. And I found that many people were seeking, first and foremost, were seeking an African American therapist because they felt like some of the issues and the concerns they had were not being validated by non people of color in the therapy space. And so I had a lot of people just kind of reaching out and trying to process through experiences of microaggressions, particularly through like going through college and graduate school. They're dealing with these microaggressions where people say certain things, and trying to process all of that and trying not to, I guess, in a sense, like act as the mad or angry black woman and like given that stereotype, but all of that anger and stress and frustration and anxiety sets in. I even recall having someone say like, I'm the only person of color in my program, and so I have to get all A's because if I don't, my professors are going to look at me like, why are you here? And so it's this deep kind of internalized racism, oppression that kind of just follows a person. And so it really kind of picked me in terms of like an area I wanted to focus on and be able to support people because it just kind of kept coming up in so many different sessions.
Well, I know that I've had my own personal experiences with that, being a student at a predominantly white undergrad at College of Charleston and a predominantly white grad school at UNC, which had its own plethora of race issues over the last couple of years. So, did you have a similar experience as a student while you were going through school?
Sure. So, I mean, I've had, oh goodness gracious, I can recall an experience from my freshman year. I attended High Point University, High Point, North Carolina, and I can recall a time, a group of black students. We went to a fraternity party at a predominantly white fraternity, and when we arrived, the young men there started making monkey noises. And yeah, so I like distinctly recall that, like, whoa, like what is happening? And just didn't even know what to make of that. And there was just a shared kind of discomfort and not really knowing what to do. Should we like stay? Should we leave? We ended up sticking around for a while and then ended up moving on. But there was just, yeah, there was just this kind of weird social disconnect where, people are very friendly, of course, and it's not this overt in your face discrimination that you experience, or at least I didn't often experience, but you can just kind of tell there were just, yeah, it was just a different energy with certain people.
I think that's one of the things that non-people of color find hard to understand when they would when they see that somebody specifically does therapy, just talking about this. Why would you need something like that? And when it comes to terminology like microaggressions, it's just like a feeling, it's just like a little, comment. It's not overt, it's not, violence, it's not physical, but these little things over time sort of get to people in a way that is mentally taxing. So, how would you describe that for people who don't experience that? Like, what is that feeling after a while that makes you want to go see a therapist for it?
I mean, oh gosh, I think it's a range of emotions. Like I've certainly, sat with people who are experiencing almost a rage because they were so dealing with it so much, and it kind of just compounds on top of it. All these different situations kind of compound, and it like turns into this rage and this like anger and bitterness, but this fear is masking it because it's like I can't express myself the way I want to, and so they just keep it all inside. And then they're just, on the I guess the other side of the spectrum is just it's internalized in terms of like what's wrong with me, why aren't people accepting of me? Am I good enough? And those types of things. And I can I, like all of that resonates with me. And so it's really easy to validate because I've walked in those spaces where I was just like, I can recall more recently, actually, when I worked for a group practice and it was an intern there. And, I changed my hair up pretty, regularly when the salon is open and I have the ability to. And I changed my hairstyle and this young lady was just like, oh, who's that? And she had actually sat in shadowed a session for me. So like she's sat in the office and had a full opportunity to know what I look like, know who I am. And because I changed my hair, she was just like, oh, okay. And it was just a very like weird kind of dynamic. And then she was just like, oh, do you change your hair because it's short? And I was like, no.
That's an odd question. I'm not really sure how to.
Right, you're like, you're like, how do you respond to that? And so that's probably a very minute example, but like those types of things, it's like, oh, what's maybe I shouldn't change my hair up so much is kind of the thought process that I went through. And so it just ranges from kind of one end to the other in terms of a spectrum of emotions. And I think people who don't walk in black or brown skin have to realize that we're hypersensitive to racism because of the history in which we kind of are derived from. And so we're kind of always looking through that lens to make sense of what's happening in our present day experience.
Wow, that's a great story because it's a great example of an instance where I think somebody is coming innocently, asking a question, right? And in at its on its face, it's a question about your hair, but for a person of color, it's not just that. Now I have to worry about what this says about me that I change my hair, whereas a person who is not a person of color, if they dye their hair, if they cut it all off or something like that, they're not going to get those questions. So you're not necessarily worried all the time about like how is what I'm doing with myself affecting how people see me.
Exactly.
So that is hard, and I feel like the privilege that is always brought up, one of the privileges that people who are not people of color have is just the not worrying about it. So how do you do your work? How do you help people get through this?
So I, primarily target or focus on just hearing a person and validating them and just kind of giving them space to feel what they're feeling and to just reaffirm them that what they're experiencing and what they feel is not wrong, it's not bad, they're not crazy, they're not overreacting. And I really like to spend some time there because I think a lot of individuals really get in their head and they try to so much to suppress their emotions and not really expressing how they truly feel because of fear of pushback, fear of, being labeled as, some type of a stereotype or not taken seriously. And so just really focusing on that piece of just validating a person. And then the other part of the work that I like to do is just psychoeducation around like racism and understanding the nuances, the complexities of it. Sometimes that involves talking about from more of a societal standpoint, but I also like to look at use a genogram and look at like a family, a client's family, and like what their experiences have been, what they witnessed within their family, what they learned, those early messages, so that they can start to identify patterns and kind of connect the dots. Like, oh yeah, mom went through this. There was some colorism there. Grandma, grew up in the Jim Crow era. There was this, she had those experiences, and really connect to that and see how this is, kind of trickled down. It's been this domino effect.
Right. So it's not just the fact that somebody said a racial slur to me today, and I feel dumb for feeling so emotional about that. It's the fact that somebody said a racial slur to me today, and I've experienced all this history or all these, this, I don't know, my upbringing around race has really made me think this way. And yeah, I'm going to get upset about that because that's on top of all this other stuff. That's amazing. I feel like people really need that grounding so they don't just feel like they're crazy. Like, why would you get mad about somebody asking you a question like that? Or why would you get mad when somebody touches your hair? Well, I get mad about that because of all this other stuff that happened years before that that I still feel on a personal level. What are some of those things that you find in people's families that sort of sets them up for this, for these mental health things?
The biggest themes that come to mind, just like right off the bat, are centered around colorism. A lot of that seems to be really, really prominent among a lot of Black women that I've worked with. And then more recently, I've really noticed this pattern in some biracial women who were adopted, and it was a transracial adoption, so they were adopted by white families, and they don't have the cultural support that they would, I guess, would be helpful in forming their identity as a biracial woman or a woman of color, and have really struggled in being dismissed in their family for expressing, very real experiences. And they're not being received well. I mean, just a number of things come up pretty regularly, and but those are the two that have been like most fascinating to me.
So how did, what is their, I don't want, like, I can't think of a word besides recovery, but what does their, how do you get them out of this, spiral in their head where they're like, I can't, I don't fit here, I don't fit here. You mentioned psychoeducation, but what is their, I guess, improvement look like?
So one of the big things I try to empower each of my clients to do is to focus on how they can be in control of their own lives. And although there are people and experiences, people in their lives that won't, necessarily get them or support them, or they may do something they don't like, or they'll have these experiences, they ultimately are in control. They can choose to set boundaries, they can choose the people they let into their lives, they can choose their inner circle, their support system. And so I really try to focus in on like, okay, you've had this experience, it really stinks. You're really struggling with that. That's valid. What can you do that will move you away from that place of hurt and pain? Or let's sit there for a little while and just kind of be with that. And then when we're ready, let's move forward and figure out how we can move forward and be an advocate for ourselves, for other people, how we can form and connect to others and build community. And really, this idea of self-care, that's a cliche and big.
Right, especially right now.
It's been, really a big focus area, but that's, a huge part of healing from race-related stress, from traumas, from, you know, anxiety, is to take care of yourself.
And not feel guilty about it.
And not feel guilty about it.
Yeah. I want to take two steps back because you said a word that I definitely want to make sure people understand. And that's, but I just was rolling with that, what you were saying, but colorism. For people who don't know what that is, can you give, can you explain that real quick?
Absolutely. It is a form of racism that happens within a community of the same group of people, and it is usually something that is experienced based on shade of skin. I've also heard that, you know, colorism also factors in like facial features as well as hair textures, but primarily it's based on this idea that if your skin is lighter, that you are more privileged, that you are beautiful, that you have more access to jobs, opportunity, education, wealth, resources. If you are darker skin, you are not considered as attractive, and you're often not considered for opportunities. And so that is kind of in a nutshell colorism. There's a lot of history, not only within the Black community, but within other groups of people. And I don't know how much, you know, research you've done into that topic, but like people in India experience colorism.
Absolutely.
People in Latin America, you know, experience colorism. So it's not just a Black issue. However, you know, our experience as Black women and Black people, it was kind of derived from that period of enslavement. And that's when it kind of gained its prominence. And it just unfortunately continues even today.
Right. So people, it does sort of pervade a lot of other races because the beauty norm is lighter skin and straighter hair. And I feel like that, and I'm hoping to have other guests to talk about it more, but I feel like across the board, the closer you are to that ideal, the more people tend to, not like you, but just the better off you are in some ways. And you said that even comes from inside the race.
Yes, absolutely. So, you know, unfortunately, it's been internalized, and some belief systems have been built around this idea that if you are lighter skin, that you are more attractive. If you are lighter skin, you have more opportunities. If you are darker skin, you know, there's, you know, some different subsets that are kind of applied there. And even modern day, you know, I can say within my own family, I have a beautiful little girl who will turn 3 this summer, and she is probably a couple shades lighter than both my husband and I. Perhaps she'll get a little browner, but she's lighter, and we have, you know, different shades within both of our families, so it's not,
right,
you know, far-fetched. But I can recall having a conversation with my father when she was born, and he is a lighter-skinned man, and he said, her complexion is beautiful. I hope she doesn't get any darker than that.
Oh.
And I was just like, oh, we're still there.
Even from your own parent.
Yeah, so it's pretty interesting. And also my mother is darker skin. She would tell both my sister and I that she chose to be with a lighter skin man and have children with a lighter skin man so that her children wouldn't have to go through what she went through.
Right. I was just going to say, it's so interesting how that sort of negative view of darker skin comes from a place of trying to protect you, trying to set you up for a better future, because mothers and fathers already know how you're going to be perceived if your skin is a certain way. So unfortunately, I'm going to tell you these things that might make you feel bad, but it's because I just want my granddaughter. I know she's going to benefit from this unfortunate racism.
Yeah.
That's confusing.
It's incredibly confusing. It can be very disheartening, you know, almost infuriating at times, because it's like it shouldn't matter.
Right.
But to me, it's just really sad that as people of color with all of the access to information. We haven't like evolved past that and formed our own beliefs and definitions of what beautiful is, of what success is, and we're still kind of operating in a very, very almost prehistoric mindset.
Yeah, it's very basic to base someone's success on something they have zero control over.
Yeah, absolutely.
Wow. So I'm so glad we talked about that. I think that that is definitely going to be a new term for some people who might be listening to this. So thank you for that. And thank you for that, that personal example. That just hits home for me. Because I hate that that's still a thing, like you said. Yeah, I mean, it's 2020. So, you know, how far have we come? So getting back to, you know, people sort of having these experiences with racism within their own race, what do you, we've talked a little bit about how people feel about racism from the outside, but I know my personal experience has been, you know, not always feeling part of the white crowd, but not always feeling part of the black crowd either. So do you have experiences with people who necessarily don't fit in with their own race and have racial issues with that?
Absolutely. I think that, you know, there's just this idea of like what blackness is, and anyone who is outside of that box, unfortunately, may end up being perceived as not as black or not black enough. And that really causes a lot of division. And, you know, I've worked with people who kind of just feel this sense of like isolation and that they are other and not really sure how to like navigate that. And again, back to this whole idea of, you know, psychoeducation to kind of just arm a person with the information. I've used this book I want to share with you.
Absolutely.
And listeners, it's called Shifting the Double Lives of Black Women in America. Obviously, a lot of the components can be applied for men too. I primarily see women, but it's a book that really focuses on just this idea of having to like shift your expectations of yourself depending on the crowd that you're in, the group of people you're in. So if you're in a predominantly white space, you may code switch.
I was going to ask about that.
And it's, you know, it's kind of a running joke amongst some of my friends and colleagues, like where you put on the quote unquote white girl voice when you're in certain settings. But then you have to switch back to, I guess, more of you're talking to your family and friends and people in your community. Now, the interesting piece with that is that not everyone is from the hood. Not everyone grew up in an urban environment. So for a lot of Black people, like their code switching may not be that much of a switch at all.
Right.
So how do we make space for those individuals? How do we open up our minds to allow those individuals to be exactly who they are without judgment?
Yeah. Wow. I'm so glad that people are talking about that more. Do you think that code switching affects people's mental health? Having to do that?
Absolutely. I think people are exhausted. There's anxious, you know, this whole idea of like this diagnosis of like social anxiety, like people not knowing what to say because they don't know how they're going to be perceived. They don't want to be rejected. And it causes, you know, immense stress and anxiety because, you know, people want to connect. We want to be in community. But I think a lot of people that I've worked with have shied away from that because they're just like, I don't know what's going to happen there.
And,
you know, they don't feel safe.
Right.
So absolutely. I think
they
that
don't
this...
feel safe to be themselves, which is sad.
Yeah.
Which is sad. So I know we're getting close to time, but you just said something that I really want to ask about, which is that most of my clients are women. Why do you think that is?
Well, that's a very loaded question. I think that it's becoming more acceptable, first and foremost, for people of color to reach out for mental health support and not, you know, be so locked into I have to handle this on my own and be superwoman, or, you know, just pray it away, go to church, because that's a lot of what people will share with me. In terms of like why it's primarily women versus men, I think there's still a bit of work to be done in terms of a lot men feeling safe and comfortable with this idea of expressing themselves and talking about their emotions. And then I also think they want a space to be able to talk with another man, and it's very few men of color practice. So I don't know. It's, you know, I think the trend is changing. I do have some male clients that are that I work with, but the vast majority are women.
That's interesting. We're still trying to get the men on board because they experience racism too, but I don't know what they do about it.
Yeah, exactly. Keep it inside until, you know, it can't be kept inside anymore, unfortunately.
Right, right. So in the time we have left, I have two more questions, and one of them is because you're a mom, I'm just really curious to know, what kind of, how are you preparing your daughter for this is a loaded question too, the world. She's a woman of color, and she's gonna, you know, and she has a brain, so mental health is gonna be part of her life. How are you preparing for that as a parent, and how are you preparing her for that?
Oh God, probably not well.
I doubt that.
I think my whole mindset right now, like all of my training, all the books I've read, you know, it just goes out the window. I turn into a mama bear, and that's my cub, and I have to protect her at all costs.
That's okay. But
yeah, you know, I think one of the things I do try to be aware of is like ensuring that she's not the only person of color in the spaces that she's in. So whether that's daycare or some type of a dance class or activity, trying to identify spaces that have some level of diversity so that she can see other people that look like her. And, you know, she's super young, but just really kind of preparing myself mentally to have some conversations like around race and gender and some of the things she might experience. I do also try to ensure that she has access to lots of books, because in recent years there have been a ton of authors that create books just for little Black girls, just for little
it
Black
happens.
Girls. And it's amazing. So I buy books for her so that she can see little brown babies that look like.
Yeah, that's so cool. Yeah, I don't have a child. But I always want those books for myself, because that just wasn't a thing in the 90s. So I'm like, I just kind of want to buy these so I can read them.
Exactly. Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that. No shade whatsoever.
So my last question for you is, I mean, you're a therapist, and no matter what kind of therapy you're doing, it is hard. So how do you take care of yourself?
Yeah, I've gotten really good at not like overloading my calendar. And I generally take 1 to 2 days off every week. And those are my admin / self-care days. And I'm very, very committed to this idea of not overworking myself. But pre-coronavirus, I would, you know, try to go and enjoy getting my hair or nails done, maybe get a massage every now and then just to do something nice. More recently, just enjoying movies and things around the house, reading books, catching up on, you know, my reading list, all that good stuff. But yeah, you know, I try to practice what I teach.
Yeah.
In terms of like, you know, if I'm going to tell a client that they should consider prioritizing their self-care, like I need to do that and I need to be modeling that. So yeah, that's kind of my little self-care plan. Sometimes I have off weeks where I don't really prioritize it, but
absolutely.
We all do.
And you just got a new puppy.
Yeah, super excited out there in the other space so I can have some quiet.
Fair enough. But you adopted through a drive-through, which I think is cool. You got
They
to
were,
do what you can during coronavirus.
yeah, it was really cool how they had it set up. So I was like very impressed by that. And I think it's, a good thing to adopt and to rescue animals if you can, if that's your thing. Yeah, so I was glad to
Nice.
do that. Maybe one day he'll be a therapy dog. We'll see.
Oh, that would be so cool. Oh my gosh. I wish I could do that with mine, but he's kind of a lot. He's a therapy dog for me, and that's about all he can handle.
I hear you.
But, until I have my own little baby, that's my little baby.
Yeah, it's good. It's good practice. A lot of people don't like this comparison between children and pets, but it's good practice.
Thank you. Thank you very much. He is a lot. I don't know about human children, but he's a lot.
It's good practice.
but yeah, this was amazing. Thank you so much for doing this. If people want to come talk to you about race and or just you're an awesome therapist, if they just want to talk to you about stuff, how
Yeah.
do they find you?
I'm on Psychology Today, so you can search me, type in Erica Thomas on Psychology Today. I will pop up. Anyone is free to shoot me an email. My work email is ethomas@etcounseling.info. And so people can reach out to me there. I'm accepting new clients, but only seeing people virtually for the time being. Hoping to get back in the office within the next month, but we'll
Right.
see.
We will see. We will see.
So yeah, I'm really flexible with costs. So if people are struggling or not insured, we can make it work and figure it out.
I
So don't
so
let that be,
appreciate that.
yeah, don't let that
Appreciate
be a
you let us.
deterrent.
Do not let
Absolutely.
that be a deterrent.
Yeah, sure.
You don't know until you ask.
Absolutely. That's it. Ask the question. Before we wrap up, I did want to share the title of this book that I've just recently purchased and been kind of delving into. It's called The Racial Healing Handbook. And so it has some really cool activities and great questions, thinking prompts that really force you to go think deeper in your understanding of like race in terms of yourself, your relationships, your worldview, your identity. So, I recommend this book if you're just really, really fascinated by the topic and
Wow, the Racial Healing Handbook.
racial healing handbook. So, it's been
Nice.
good so far. I'm definitely gonna make it a recommendation for some of my clients who want to do
Absolutely.
deep work around that.
Thank you so much. I love a good book recommendation.
Yeah,
Because
absolutely.
my therapist can't be on the phone all the time. So
Right.
just refer me to page whatever. Well, thank you so much, Erica, for your time. I hope this is the last time we talk, but for now, thank you. And this has been a great episode.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I super appreciate it. Anytime you want to chat, just reach out and happy to connect again.
Thank you. Well, this has been another episode of the Beautiful Positions Podcast. Bye, y'all.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Pillowfort Sessions podcast. We so appreciate your curiosity. This show was edited and produced by me, Nicole Fortune, and my partner, Mike Young. Background sounds and general cuteness provided by Smitty Jerome the dog and Miles Morales the cat. If you're listening on iTunes, please subscribe and leave us a review. It helps people find us. If you want to see video versions of sessions and or follow us on the social medias, check out our website, pillowfortpod.com. Do you or someone you know want to be in the Pillow Fort? Go email us right now at pillowfortpod@gmail.com. Say good?
Yeah.
Yeah. Bye, y'all.